You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Sleep in Society. I'm your host, Ruhi Snyder, and today's topic of conversation is grit. Grit in scholarly literature is defined as perseverance and passion for long-term goals. Joining me for this conversation is my dear friend, Dr. Joe Nashid. And Joe, I would like to welcome you to this episode of Sleep in Society. And I want to express my deep gratitude that you are willing to go on these incredible journeys and these very complex conversations with me. So thank you so much and welcome.
Thank you so much, Ruhi. I'm excited to be here and chat about this.
This is an interesting topic.
Very much so.
When I first came across grit and how it's completely changed as I've gotten deeper and deeper into the literature itself. And I wanted to ask you, when did you arrive at the concept of grit, or even just the word grit?
Oh, gosh, this is that's a tough one, Ruhi.
Yeah.
As I've grown older, I've understood it a little bit better. As for when I first heard it, it's tough for me to actually pinpoint that. It was likely, sometime in my university career, years and years ago that I probably heard it, but probably confused it a little bit with the idea of resilience.
Mm-hmm.
because it sounds a little bit similar to that, but in fact, they are two very different concepts altogether. So it's tough for me to actually kind of pinpoint when that point was. How about you?
I think that's, I've been thinking about this for quite a while. So there's how we throw resilience around and mm-hmm. well-being around, and it's kind of present in our popular culture. And I think grit just came in, but it didn't actually ping. Because those are the things that are around. You think about resilience, right, and you're like, you don't actually go deep into what it actually involves. What are the
right
traits? Like, what does it actually involve in terms of being resilient?
Mm-hmm.
And as we discussed in terms of resilience, it's our ability to be able to adapt to changing variables and
right
to be able to face failures. And this is a conversation that you and I had in our previous episode, which was, by the way, amazing. And where we go into what resilience means and what the definition of it is and how we arrived at that concept of resilience. So grit was somewhere back there, but it didn't actually ping until I went, I was on a walk with a very dear friend of mine who's a clinical psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And we were actually having a conversation on resilience. And he was studying and treating undergraduate and graduate students. And as we were talking about resilience, he was like, and then there is this grit component. And I'm like, I honestly thought that grit and resilience, like you, were basically the same thing, just another mm-hmm. word for the same kind of concept.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, no, they're two different things. And we didn't go deep into it because he said that's not something he's like really looked into it, but resilience and grit are two different things. And that's when I picked up on it. And slowly I thought, oh, this is interesting. I think I want to have a look at this one and see what this actually means. What is grit and how is it different from resilience?
Mm-hmm.
And as we said with resilience can be short term, right? Resilience mm-hmm. can be, I don't feel like doing the workout today, but I will do it.
Mm-hmm.
I failed my test today, but I'm going to work harder at it, or I'm going to improve myself and I'm going to retake it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas grit, when I started looking at it, it's actually perseverance. Perseverance, yep. But in terms of like long-term goals. Where
very long-term.
Very long-term. Right. Where time itself is an abstract entity. Mm-hmm. It's not like in 2 years I will be doing this. It's more like this is my goal in life. Mm-hmm. This is how I want to get to it, and being able to get there despite the obstacles, despite the failures and all of those things that are going to, and the challenges that are going to come your way, mm-hmm. And to make it to that particular goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as I got even deeper into the scholarly literature, I realized that there were components of grit that I didn't actually appreciate at all. So, which, you know, was very interesting because there's a grit scale, right?
Right.
Which was actually Angela Duckworth's grit scale, because she's pioneer in this particular conceptualization of what grit is and making it into more of a quantitative entity. And so she did, there's a grit scale, and some of those things I was like, oh yeah, I like that. Yeah, I'm diligent. I am a hard worker. Mm-hmm. And then there are questions like, do you always finish what you start? And I was like, no. And then there was questions like, do your goals change every year? And I was like, I don't think my goals change, but I think my perception about things alters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there were certain things that I was like, oh, this is kind of constrained. And there's a lot of elements from this that are missing.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually, when you're looking at grit from an academic, like academic point of view, I think the constraints are fairly narrow.
Yep.
And so I thought that was pretty interesting, like how once I started looking at the literature about grit and started really looking at the ideas of grit, how my concept of grit actually altered. How do you think you're a fairly gritty person? Do you rank high on grit, for example?
I think I do.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, some of the things that you mentioned, you know, whether they're changing goals, finishing what you always started, you know, I don't always do that. And I think it's very hard for anyone to, you know, persistently do that all the time. But I would say, yeah, because I do have these long-term goals, and, you know, they're, you know, intimately intertwined with my passions, and I, you know, that's kind of how I view grit is, you know, do you love something enough to forge ahead over the long term, you know, and, you know, persist in the face of setbacks and downfalls, and are you willing to put in all of that extra energy to hopefully get to where you want to be? And you know, life is a dynamic process, like, and we're often as humans, we're often very goal oriented. So what I mean by that is, oh, I need to get to this place in life. And then once you reach there, it's on to the next goal. Mm-hmm. It's on to the next goal. But and we all do that. But it's difficult sometimes to do two things, and that's enjoy the process along the way. I think sometimes we definitely lose sight of that. But another thing is you know, it's human nature to have these changing goals and pivoting and so, you know, in that respect, I think I agree with you in that, you know, my concept of grit, how I view it has changed a little bit too, especially diving into some of this literature.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, from my own perspective, I do believe that, you know, one of my character traits is being gritty. You know, I'm the type of person that, you know, I set my sights on something, and if I really love it, there's I'm going to try and get there, you know, regardless of what obstacles are in my way. And I think that's, I've been fortunate enough to, you know, have, you know, those, that perseverance and passion. And I think it's served me, you know, all right in my life so far. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it's something that I never lose. And, you know, cause I think it is something that defines me a little bit, because, you know, looking back when I was a young kid, I don't think too many people would have seen me, where I am today. And, you know, and I don't just mean like it, the traditional, you know, successes in terms of, academia and, you know, things like that. I mean, like just in life, the type of person I am and things like that. I'm not sure if that makes entire sense, but I do think it's a part of my personality for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I think like with grit too, and looking at it from a retrospective perspective, were there certain elements that shaped it in your early childhood? You think early childhood or adolescent? Do you think that helped contribute towards that idea of perseverance?
Absolutely. I think I've mentioned this to you before, but I describe myself as having this chip on my shoulder, and that's been, and I don't really describe it as a chip. I describe it as like a boulder kind of sitting there. Mm-hmm. And, I have this weird, you know, thing with me that my past experiences have absolutely shaped that. You know, someone tries to tell me, oh, you can't do this or you won't get there, I, you know, that feeds into that passion and perseverance for me. And, you know, it's almost like added motivation, mm-hmm. to do and get to where I am. And also, you know, I'm lucky my family, my parents have fostered that idea of, you know, if you want and love something enough, you go after it at all costs. And, you know, I'm sure even me chasing some of my dreams has even pained them a little bit to see some of my failures and setbacks along the way. But to be honest with you, you know, their support and their teachings have really kind of like, you know, fostered that idea that, yeah, it sucks sometimes, but you can still get there. Don't, mm-hmm. don't let that stuff hold you back, whether they were bad experiences or unfortunate ones or anything like that. So
it's like you had that kind of safe and stable environment growing up within your family, especially the support from your parents and all of that, to be able to help you deal with all the other challenges that that were coming your way. Or
my parents definitely nurtured that idea. Mm-hmm. There was stability there, which I'm extremely and utterly fortunate, mm-hmm. To have had. But in almost every other area of my life, there was, you know, a lot of disarray and chaos. And, you know, whether it was at school, making friends, you know, trying to play sports. And, you know, growing up in the city of Kingston wasn't super easy for me. I'm lucky to have that kind of groundedness provided by my parents and my family, and it's been maintained. I'm, you know, I joke sometimes that I have like the two best parents in the world, and but I really actually do believe that. You know, mm-hmm. they're pretty awesome in that respect. So
yeah, because as I was looking at like you, I have also had a challenging, I would say, adolescence, coming mm-hmm. from one culture, going into another.
Absolutely.
And trying to figure out my place in a new society, a new system. and then all of the other challenges that come, with adolescence, combined with the fact that you are kind of on your own in a new culture, for sure. Yeah. But I think the reason I feel that I persevered is also because I was also given the necessary skills and tools and by my parents that had the foresight to be able to see that, yeah, we are going to come, we are going to have many obstacles in our life and many challenges in our life, and they needed to prep us for that. And they did. They did an amazing job in an incredible way in terms of the educational skills they gave us, in terms of how to deal with certain situations, character building. All of that, I think, is I attribute to that the reason that I persevered in certain things where others might not have is because I have the skills and the tools that were provided to me at a very young age. And I think that's where, when I'm looking at the grit literature, and that's when I'm looking at how Angela Duckworth's ideas on perseverance and consistency and all of that, when it comes, I did not agree with a lot of it. Because I looked at it and I thought, this is very interesting, because mostly she's looking at highly accomplished people and people who have, you know, whether they are West Point cadets and whether they are spelling bee contestants or some of the top CEOs. And she's looking and studying them and interviewing them and then, you know, looking at their successes and attributing it to perseverance and consistency, and, you know, that they had a passion for this particular goal and they went all ahead at it and got to where they are, and therefore they had that specific trait, which is grit. Now, what really worried me about this is what is most challenging to me, that I found challenging, is when they start using the term grit in terms of education. And where they are. So that's where I think I'm a gritty person. I have the grit and I can persevere. I can, like, I accept failure in my life. I don't have issues with that. And I don't see failure as failure. I see it as another way of learning and opportunity, changing my variables, which we actually had a discussion on during our resilience episode.
Yes.
But I think when I was looking at what she was looking at, I thought, oh, this is like very applicable to if you are affluent and if you are coming from an environment that is super safe and very stable. And there is certain certainty, like that you don't have uncontrolled variables all of the time. This, I think, then, and your passions are supported, right? So you can experiment with your passions, and you can experiment, because I think there are very few people that I know that can, at the age of 10 or at the age of 11, will tell you what they want to be in their life. Sure, like at the age of 4 or 5, my child was like, I want to be an anthropologist, a paleontologist, a scientist, a biologist, right? But as we start moving through life, those goals change. Our passions change, obviously. Teen years is, the adolescence is the period where you are experimenting. You are experimenting with ideas. You are trying to figure out who you are as a human being. And therefore, I think the ideas of long-term goals is kind of like, I thought that was, I wasn't sure about that, that if you can put that into that category at that particular point in that particular time in terms of adolescence, when the brain itself is developing. And for sure, you can have kids who are coming from very stable environments, as I said, that are coming from parents that are fully supportive of their goals, that are fully supportive of their passions, and then grit can be kind of a trait that you can easily develop. But what happens then if that's not the case? What happened? I started thinking about this. What happens when your environment is unstable? What happens when there is, you know, when you're marginalized? Mm-hmm. What happens to those people? Like, then do we say we can train grit into you? So that to me became, during this like entirety of like when you and I started talking about this, I started really looking at this. And then I realized that they are actually using this grit scale for education, in especially in the United States, to build, I don't know, character. I don't know, developing character or getting them ready for success.
And I think that's exactly how they use it. Yeah.
But I'm thinking, if you've been marginalized most of your life, expecting grit to push you out of situations is actually very dangerous. Because what you're doing is then you're putting the onus on the individual in terms of the education system. You are saying, regardless of your environment, regardless of the poverty, regardless of the violence that you're in, if you work hard enough, if you're diligent, if you set up goals, and if you become passionate about it, then you will achieve them. This is I thought this is a neoliberal fallacy. You are telling an individual, you're not looking at their entirety of their situation. And I'm going to give an example of that. Example of that is that there are a lot of studies that were done, and in terms of sleep, right? But in terms of sleep in neighborhoods, that in terms of sleep in adolescence in neighborhoods, that there was like a high probability of gang violence, high probability of like environmental noise, and kids that are living in environments that are actually high in stress. And we know what that does to brain development. We know that it actually slows down the growth process, right? That it does not, it actually hampers cognitive abilities. So if we are using this model of grit and applying it to these kids who don't even have that kind of allostatic load to take on even minor stresses of life, minor stresses of life are mountains to them. And then we're saying, no, if you work hard enough, you do your homework every day, you pass the test, you run fast enough, that you will be a successful person.
Yeah.
That you have the grit. And this really bothered me about it, because I think your environment, how you're raised, how your parents are a big factor in terms of development of grit.
I think what you're getting at is the whole, and this plays a part in almost everything that we do, is the nature-nurture idea, right? And if you don't have that nurture component, because obviously there's genetic components to almost everything, you know, your personality and whatnot as well. But the nurture component, I should say, if that's not there and that's not fostered, at least to some degree, and you have chaos surrounding you at all times, it's very difficult to develop, this character trait. And then to say that, almost negate that when you're thinking about success is a little bit absurd to me, because you do need pieces in place around you to actually be, to develop certain things, right?
Like, absolutely.
You can, I mean, to use a different example, is you can be the fastest runner in the world, but if you don't have a track team nearby, then no one's going to know you. No one's going to know who you are, you know, and that's a like extreme example. And maybe you won't develop into that, successful, gritty individual who who becomes super successful. So to negate that nurture component I'm not sure if the literature has done it intentionally, but I do agree with you that, you know, a lot of the individuals that they observe who have this characteristic, they are often, like you said, people who have very come from possibly affluent backgrounds, or they're extremely successful. And that's not to say that people who don't have that aren't gritty, not by any means, because I know people who didn't have that nurture component who are extremely gritty and some of the most gritty people I know. Mm-hmm. But you know, that part, you can't simply negate it.
No. And then, you know, because I think it's creating a very narrow field. Mm-hmm. And that's what, mm-hmm. that was what was bothering me. And I think the reason that you, because empirical data, it's easy to look at academic achievements, or yes. it's because you can quantify it.
Yes.
And then you can ask somebody, hey, you do your homework without any obstacles. Like there's a whole grit questionnaire that has been given in various schools to see, mm-hmm. I can do my homework without like any obstacles. I always try to pay attention to whatever the teacher is saying, and then doing the measuring the grit scale. But mm-hmm. I think that is for particular individuals, and I don't think everybody has that particular trait. And then saying that this is something we can foster in people without actually looking at the systems and the circumstances of why do they not have grit to begin with, mm-hmm. is, I think, negligent.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think you hit the nail on the head when we describe personality traits or anything like this. We often try and fit people into boxes, and it's not a one-size-fits-all ever.
Mm-hmm.
So saying like this person, you know, has grit because of X, Y, and Z, so then everyone should have grit because of X, Y, and Z, or, you know, everyone who has X, Y, and Z has grit, mm-hmm. that's absurd. You know, that's totally absurd. And then just being, you know, scientist, I know that that just doesn't work. That simply doesn't work. You're always going to find people who are outliers on either end of the spectrum.
Yeah, even if you have outliers, but I think you're trying to say that if you exhibit the following traits, or if we can, mm-hmm. we can foster certain traits into you, you can be successful as an individual, which again, I'm going to come to when we say that if we can foster the following traits into you, you will become a successful individual, but the responsibility is on you.
Yeah.
As I talk about inner cities in USA, because there are lots of studies done in inner cities of USA, because poverty is so prevalent. Mm-hmm. But we're not looking at the fact that perhaps it's systemic racism, perhaps it's poverty that's causing these people 100%. To not be successful in life. But we say, oh, but if we foster these particular elements into you, maybe you will push yourself out of poverty. Maybe you will, you know, you will join the affluent or even middle class people, mm-hmm. putting the onus on the individual. And I think that was the part that really, as I said, that was the part that really bothered me. Mm-hmm. That was something that I cannot agree to. I think it's wonderful if we can teach resilience to our mm-hmm. children. And I think I think that's our responsibility. I think resilience is a wonderful element to be able to, I think, as is grit. But if we are looking at grit and if we're wanting to teach grit, I think it's so important that we look at the entirety of what these people need, what these children need, what this youth, you know, group needs in order for us to be able to foster that.
So one of the things that I think, you know, that just popped into my head is, you know, those individuals, it suggests that the mentors or people who can foster those things and help those individuals and take the onus off of them a little bit, are extremely valuable. You know, if I know we try and teach these traits, but if you can have someone who is, you feel that are, is maybe in your corner all the time, and whether it's, you know, a teacher, coach, parent, anything like that, who will, you know, just simply be there for you, that could, that's almost like extremely valuable in terms of developing some of these traits. I don't know what, how you feel about that, but I feel like that's a little bit what you're getting at with taking the onus off of the individual a little bit.
I think it's always good to have somebody in your corner. If I didn't have people in my corner, I don't think I would have the perseverance or the passion for my long-term goals. I don't think any person is an island unto themselves. But I also think, for example, like looking at just sleep, and when I'm having conversations with kids on sleep and we're looking at their environment, if the environment is not conducive for them to have good sleep, then even being in their corner is not going to serve them well.
Absolutely.
If I cannot provide them with the environment that is conducive to their sleep, then it's, I'm just talking the talk.
Yes, yes.
You know, absolutely. I'm just saying, make it like this is, these are the factors that you need. You know, you need a quiet place. You need a cool bedroom. You need to put your phones away at night, an hour or 2 hours prior to your bedtime. You need to have a consistent bedtime. You need to be able to eat well in the morning. But if those things are not there for them, Joe, if they don't have a quiet bedroom, if their house is a toxic environment for them to be growing up in, then what I found when my conversations with all these kids was that these, then what are they going to do? They are actually going to go and hang out on their phones because that's a mode for them that is comforting. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to help them get good sleep either. But if the environment is toxic, then there isn't much like my talk on sleep and good sleep habits or sleep hygiene is not going to have that much of an impact on them. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, being in their corner and advocating for them is definitely a way to go. But I think you also, it's really important that when, you know, you mentor kids, you are a coach, you're mentoring kids, and I'm involved in terms of education of kids. I think it's really important then that if those environments are not there for them, are not conducive to their well-being, is not conducive towards resilience or grit, then we need to address that as well. And not to say, here are the five things, here are the five traits you need to be a successful person. Here are the five things you need to have good sleep, when those things are not within their control at all. And I think that's what I was looking at. And then there's so much literature in terms of like sleep in adolescence in these inner city neighborhoods where there is such high probability of violence and noise. And how are you supposed to have proper sleep amidst the noise? And there is a strong correlation that has been shown that kids growing up in these environments actually are not sleeping well and have higher chances or higher probabilities of anxiety and depression in their life. And if you have anxiety and depression in their life, how are you going to pull yourself up from that pit? What was interesting was I was having, you know, my child, she was very excited about this conversation, by the way, Joe, because when we started talking about it yesterday, I was like, oh, yeah, Joe and I are about to have this conversation. We started talking about it. And she started saying, she goes, you know, the way I see it, and this is her example that she used. She said, the way I see it, some people have an easy way to grit. It's like line A to line B. You just walk there, you run there, and you're there. Other people, it's more like a ramp, you know, you have to climb up this ramp. Other people, it's a set of staircase. that you actually have to climb certain stairs to get to that particular goal in your life. And then there are those that it's just a sheer cliff.
Yep.
There is no rope to climb. And then we're saying to these people, oh, you know, pick yourself up from your bootstrings, Baba, mm-hmm. when they don't even have boots.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, that is such an interesting way to be looking at things. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. And what would you say in terms of, like, if you're looking at it retrospectively in your life, mm-hmm. What are the attributes you think you give in terms of how do you define grit in your life? Let's leave the scholarly literature behind and how it's defined by these scholars. Well, you look at your life because you've achieved a lot. You've come a long way. Let's just say you've come a long way and you have a long way to go, mm-hmm. but you are passionate about it and you are on the path.
Okay.
Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah,
is that an equitable way to put it?
Sure. I honestly, you know what, Ruhi, I'm obsessive and I'm stubborn. And those are two things, along with being a little bit resourceful, that I think really kind of feed into the idea of grit for me. Because, like I mentioned before, you know, I get it in my head about something, then, you know, you could put a wall up in front of me and I'm going to figure out a way to get through it. I'll either climb it, go around it, or just simply run through it. And that's kind of been my mentality, you know, over the last 20 years or so of how do I get to where I want to be? And it's really easy sometimes to, you know, just say, okay, if you reach this obstacle, like, okay, no, it's not for me, or someone tells you, yeah, you can't do this, then the easy way out is simply, okay, that's fine. You're right. But for me, it's almost like adding gas to a fire.
Mm-hmm.
Someone tells me that and I'm, you know, or I just get it in my head and this flame just erupts and I need to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whether that's a good thing or bad thing, I'm not sure. To be honest, it there has been times it's been detrimental for me, because I'm stubborn to a fault.
Do you have an example?
You know, it's so for me, I think, you know, sometimes I do things that are not in my best interest and I get it in my head that I got to do this. And, you know, it can range from, you know, whether it's my professional life or my personal life, you know, whether I'm doing something, I it's hard for me to be extremely specific, mm-hmm. and partly I don't really want to.
Yeah, but it's if it's personal, of course. Yeah.
But yes, you know, it's tough sometimes. You know, you realize in retrospect that was not the best attitude to have towards that. Now it's helped me immensely in many many areas,
mm-hmm.
but there has been times where it's been a detriment, mm-hmm. for sure, 100%. And you know, a good example might be, you know, when I was playing basketball, for example, I tore my groin, like badly, very badly.
Gosh, how old were you?
25 maybe. And I remember, you know what? It's not that bad. Mm-hmm. I'll just play through it. And someone told me, no, you really shouldn't play through it. And I was like, no, it's fine. I'll be fine. About a year later, I could barely walk. And like, really, I needed a cane and it was a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's probably a really good example. And I saw a lot of people after, and I remember, you know, kind of kicking myself a little bit, like, was that worth it? You know, was my stubbornness really justified in this case? And, you know, in retrospect, of course not. Of course not, you know. It was a terrible time after that. So, you know, that's probably the best example I can give you, without being too personal or anything like that.
But no, that's a good example.
You know, so.
When we stand in our own way.
Yes, absolutely. And I've done it before. I've done it before. It's you know, you want to be sometimes that person that, no, I'm too tough for this. I can push through it. I can do this. But sometimes doing that is not in your best interest. And it's hard for you to see. So, yeah.
That's pretty good. And I think, like, also, we touched upon it last time, is like what the idea of success is. Like, how do you define success? How do you define success as a human being? Have you yourself given it much thought? I know we talked about the idea that you need obsession. You need a bit of, like, the way I look at it, Joe, before I go into that particular question I just gave you, is the way I look at it. So there's, like, an analogy I like to use is cooking, for I love cooking.
Yeah.
So everything has a recipe, right, in which you add certain ingredients and certain amount of ingredients, which can make the dish just beautiful or it can completely ruin it, right? So the way I see grit is like, yeah, absolutely. You need, obsession is a component of it. Stubbornness is a component of it. Resilience is a component of it. Like, determination is a component of it, but each in a certain dose. Because if we become too obsessive about something, or we're too stubborn, as, you know, you just mentioned a perfect example in terms of being stubborn, that it can be detrimental to us.
Absolutely.
And I think so each of those things are things need to be in a certain quantity, because I think being too obsessive about things, like being too obsessive about that, that's the goal I'm going to achieve regardless of whatever comes in my way. And that can also be detrimental, not necessarily for your personal goals, but those that are around us. Like, we can say, you know, that what Steve Jobs did was amazing. Like, you know, sure, he had grit, resilience. Look what he achieved. Jeff Bezos, look what he, like, you know, for sure. But it's at the cost of what?
Yeah.
If I look at, if you read the biography of Steve Jobs, if we look at what's coming about of Jeff Bezos, they weren't good humans.
No.
Like that, you know, I think it's fantastic to have grit. I think it's fantastic to have success. But I don't think it should be at the expense of our other human beings. I don't think it should be at the expense of our climate. I don't think it should be at the expense of other people's labors or their service, like, you know, their serfdom. I think if we have to have those elements, then we should also include kindness and ethics and integrity and courage and honesty. Sometimes it takes courage to back away from things. I think, like, really, like, the way I look at it is climbing. Climbing is a perfect example for this. Climbing is, yeah, of course it takes grit, because first of all, it takes a while to get to climbing, and it is an act of perseverance because it's physically and mentally really, really demanding.
Yep.
Right? And then you're going to come to a certain point where you have to decide whether you should go on or whether you should back down. Because going on, you might reach the summit and get to the summit and achieve what you wanted to, but it can actually be detrimental in terms of it might put you and your team at risk.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you should back away from that summit, even if it's within reach. Right? So it takes courage and even grit to say, we need to back down because that actually is not going to serve anyone well. So I think, like, that's a good example in terms of when you need courage, when you need to back away, and that you're thinking about the whole rather than the one. And I think that part for me, when I'm looking at the scholarly literature of grit, that element really was missing from the whole thing, because it's such a focus on the individual, the success of an individual, rather than success of a, in terms of looking at it from more of a holistic perspective. And I think that's something that if we are looking at it, or maybe we need to redefine what grit is, because actually we should redefine what success is and what failure is, which was part of our conversation in terms of resilience, which brings me to your question. How do you see, what traits do you see? You are definitely, there's obsession, there's stubbornness and all of those things. And you've already said that, you know, you also have had different perspectives from your various experiences in life. What else would you like to add to your...
Well, I think for me, the other thing is, you know, obviously the resilience component. That's, you know, I think I told you this before. I've failed so many more times than I've, you know, been quote unquote successful. And you know, it like I said, it's really easy to take the take those failures, or like learning opportunity, treat those failures as kind of like hard endpoints instead of seeing them as learning opportunities to grow and be better, basically. So but to get back to your question about what do I see is success. Everyone defines this differently. You know, I mean, I was talking to someone, you know, a few months ago, and they said money is what I see success. That's a way of keeping score for me. And I remember being like, oh wow, that's not the way that I see it at all. I personally see it as just happiness and content with what you're doing on a day-to-day basis and making an impact, not only on people closest around you, but maybe on a more naive scale or larger scale, but the population and the world maybe a little bit. So, in terms of success for me, I think what it really boils down to is are you happy? You know, are you content? And that can be very different for very different, you know, such different people. So for me, I think that's what it boils down to. I think I mentioned this to you. I love what I do. I am extremely fortunate, and I feel blessed to be able to continue learning, you know, be a lifelong learner, and, you know, be exposed to the research projects that I'm exposed to, and, you know, learning the clinical aspects that I'm learning. That for me makes me happy. And, you know, I'm not even remotely close to the end of my journey, but, that's, you know, I see this path along the way. I see that as, for me, myself, that's success to me. And I don't know where it's going to go. I really don't. But right now, I know that I wake up most days with a smile on my face, and I'm fortunate, and I feel blessed to be able to do that. And to me, that's success. So
lovely.
It's probably not the same as everyone else's, but for me, I'm good with that.
That's quite lovely. No, that's good. Absolutely. And I think it's also just to say that it's really important, and we touched upon this, that when we are making those paths in our life and creating goals in our life, that we also are ready to accept that most of the time, likelihood is that we, you know, are likely to fail, and that's okay.
100%.
And then, you know, that it'll give us an opportunity to look at different it in a different way, and then perhaps change our course in a different way, that if you are looking at lifelong goals, it's really important to come to that idea of self-awareness, to look inside of yourself and see who it is that you want to become as a human being, not what, who it is. Who do you want to be as a human being? And after doing all of this, all of these conversations with you, which, by the way, I have to tell our audience that Joe and I have been working at it back and forth for quite a while. We've had a multitude of conversations before we come to our mics. Because we are also sifting through all of these things. And therefore, once, you know, we've come to a certain point where we're like, yeah, we would like to share this with the rest of the world, then we come to our mics. So you and I've had these conversations, and I hope we're going to continue to have many conversations.
Absolutely.
Is that I find that for me, it is, it's that idea of self-awareness, coming to that identity of who you are, who do you want to be, not who you are, because I think that's a continuous process, but who do you want to be as a human being, and then allowing yourself the flexibility to be able to deal with what life is going to be throwing at you, right?
I love that.
And for me, idea of success is that I can perhaps contribute towards that, contribute to identify all of these elements and go deeper into it and say, these are the gaps that I found. These are the gaps that I found through my lived experiences. And these are the gaps that I found looking up the scholarly literature, because I don't want a narrow point of view and say, these are the traits that you need to be a successful individual. I think it's much more, it's complex, it's way more complex, and it's deep, and I think we need to redefine who we want to be as human beings, because otherwise we are in trouble.
I completely agree with you. I think that's a extremely eloquent way of putting it, Ruhi, and that's honestly fantastic. And it's that changing aspect that you suggested there, and that growing aspect, which really resonates with me. I think that's really fantastic.
Well, my dear friend, I'm absolutely delighted that we had this conversation. And I hope at later point that we are going to have another one.
Oh, you bet. You bet. Anytime. I love these. Thank you so much. This has been a fantastic chat again. I really can't thank you enough, Ruhi.
I can't thank you enough. And I want to thank everyone who's been listening to this, and thank you for listening to this episode of Sleep in Society on Grit, and I will connect soon.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep in Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget to follow us on social media @RuhiSleep on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.